And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that co-host shouting, it's Daner and Jay.
All right, the latest edition to Hear That Podcast Ground is presented by Visa, a network working for everyone. And as always, Paul Leonard Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here working for you, Jay. Happy holidays. We're almost there. Almost Christmas time.
Happy Festivus.
Happy Festivus. We're going to celebrate that today.
Yes.
It's going to be a Festivus for the rest of us, and we're bringing the pole out of the crawl space, Jay. Airing of the grievances on Hear That Podcast Growling today will be part of our show. I'm very excited about that. We got a lot to get to. Big game.
Huge game.
Biggest game at Paul Brown Stadium in 6 years, at least in terms of leverage and importance to the playoffs. And so we've got a lot to dive into there. We're going to talk to Jeff Zrebeck in Baltimore, and it might be the most interesting, relevant conversation with the opposing beat writer we've ever had, because there's a whole lot going on in Baltimore between they now have a COVID outbreak. There's questions of if this game would even maybe be played on Sunday. Their quarterback situation is up in the air and sort of shrouded in mystery. There is a lot to get to with Jeff, and you do. And so that's going to be an important conversation.
I missed an opportunity. I should have asked him if he sees himself as more of a corner or a safety if he were to be pressed into action on Sunday.
We're reaching that point. We're reaching that point, as you'll hear him tick through the healthy bodies, and it's not a long list as the Ravens defense tries to figure out how the hell they're going to do this on Sunday. But I feel like this has been the every week with the Ravens this year, I always say, how are they possibly going to pull this one off? And then there they are at the end. It's been a bit of a miracle working. And, you know, as much as John Harbaugh has taken heat in Baltimore, you wouldn't believe the conversations happening in Baltimore about John Harbaugh. Obviously, a lot of it centered around some of the decisions he's made. But he'd be in my coach of the year conversation at this point. Would you consider everything that has happened to them? And to still be sitting here at 8-6 with a chance, I mean, to me is amazing, because they have been beset by injuries and adversity all year long.
It is amazing, but on the flip side, they are 0-3 in December. They were coming in since Lamar got there. They had been 14-2 in December coming into this year. And still, even with this 3-game losing streak, they still have more December wins than anybody but Kansas City. Kansas City has 15. I mean, it's a franchise that just finds a way to be at its best at the end of the year. And it'd be as great as a job as he's done. It would be hard to give coach of the year to a coach whose team is 0-3 to start December.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But when you're out there playing with people that no one's ever heard of, that are straight off the street, and still finding a way to keep games close. They've lost three in a row by a total of 4 points, and missed 2 2-point conversions at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, with the players that they're rolling out there, to be able to say that sentence alone to me is success. You're right. The award would never actually go to him, but I look at it and I come away incredibly impressed with the job that he's been able to do. So we're going to have that. We're going to have our airing of the grievances. We'll talk to Jeff. We will dive into our predictions, growler bet, run passer boot, all of those things coming your way as we prepare you for Sunday likely Sunday. We hope Sunday at one. We hope this doesn't turn into a situation where we get the 2-day postponement like we saw 3 games last week. But it's going to be a touchy next 24 to 48 hours as we monitor if the Ravens have to put another load of, they put 5 people on COVID reserve again yesterday. If that continues to go that direction, we may be having very different conversations. We may have to drop an emergency pod on you on Christmas Eve, and no one wants to do that.
No.
Absolutely no one wants to do that. Let's hop into the news here locally, and we'll start with the injury news, which is good. You know, the injury report coming out on Wednesday has been sort of a devastating tweet in recent weeks, but this week it was not. This week we had what we already knew, Logan Wilson, who's not going to play on Sunday, being not participating. Khalid Kareem, who's in concussion protocol, which we know how that goes. Unlikely he'll probably play, but we knew that. DJ Reader was listed as a knee, but he seems to say that he's going to be okay after he put out praying hands on Twitter and scared everyone and then said, no, I'm fine, everybody. But DJ Reader has been taking Wednesdays off for 3 straight weeks. So he likely is fine. Drew Sample showed up with a foot injury that we're not super sure of. But that's it for did not practices. Limited was Akeem Adeniji with the ankle, Mitchell Wilcox with the toe. Full participant for the first time since the pinky injury on Wednesday is Joe Burrow. And Joe Mixon a full participant despite the ankle that had people nervous from this past weekend. So that is very good news on a very clean sheet for the Bengals in front of one of their biggest games of the year.
Yeah, and Burrow, you know, 2 weeks in a row now, he's just listed with right finger. It was right finger slash knee for a while, but the knee hasn't been on there. That is no longer an issue. You have to feel Adeniji is going to be good to go and get back in there for Jackson Carmen. So it is. You still wonder about Khalid Kareem. Those concussions are hard to judge. And the fact that he didn't go yesterday, it doesn't seem likely they're going to have him, but that with Hubbard and Hendrickson, you'd like to have an extra red edge rusher, but I don't think that's that big of a deal for week 16. This is an injury report anybody would take, especially Baltimore.
Baltimore would take anything even slightly resembling this. Baltimore, who's, you know, has 9 of their 24 defensive players that are actually on their roster, not counting those on injured reserve already on either the COVID list and then a few more not practicing because they're nursing injuries. I mean, they are, it's a total mess. And their secondary in particular has no one left but practice squad guys. So we'll get into that with Jeff here. Other news, Pro Bowl announced yesterday. Joe Mixon, Trey Hendrickson, Ja'Marr Chase all make the Pro Bowl. And the Bengals had a number of alternates. Joe Burrow is a second alternate at quarterback. Long snapper Clark Harris, second alternate. Defensive end Sam Hubbard, fourth. Defensive tackle Larry Ogunjobi, fourth. Cornerback Mike Hilton, fifth. So there's your Pro Bowl representation this year. We'll touch more on that in the airing of the grievances, which is where most Pro Bowl conversations begin. This is my disclaimer. I have my essentially a scheduled tweet I like to send out every year. I don't think I even did it yesterday because it didn't even feel worth it to remind everyone that the Pro Bowl as a game and a voting process and a general idea is a complete and utter sham and should not be taken seriously in any way, shape, or form.
It was my week to come up with the questions for the whip around. And I even told Jeb Zrebeck, I said, I can't wait to see Zach's reaction when I stick this Pro Bowl question in there. And he did not disappoint.
Keep an eye on that.
He said he would rather break down preseason games than talk about the Pro Bowl.
I totally agree. The messed up thing about the Pro Bowl, though, that has changed with the new CBA is they put contract escalators for fifth-year options into Pro Bowl nods. That is astounding to me. What a ridiculous concept. That I remember talking about it when the CBA came out, how much I could not believe that. So now you owe a ton more money to Ja'Marr Chase because he made a Pro Bowl. When the fact that people, the voting and everything for Pro Bowls is just absurd. There's also playtime percentage as a part of that. But they kind of wanted to take out the whole draft slot, 1 through 10 gets this and 11 through 32 gets this. So they decided somehow landed on freaking Pro Bowls, which is just absurd. But either way, congratulations to Ja'Marr Chase for making a bunch more money on landing that. I want to talk a little bit about the game and then get to Jeff before we air grievances. Here's the thing about this one, Jay. We have talked about the certain game plan that the Bengals need to execute to win in recent weeks, and it's been very kind of clear, right? It has been this grinding, don't make mistakes, run the ball type stuff, and take your shots when you have to. Now, San Francisco was a little bit, they had the depleted secondary, and there's some similarities I see here in San Francisco and Baltimore in that respect defensively. But this is a Joe Burrow game. This is not a line it up and run it. This is not like Denver. This is a your mismatch. Your way to dominate this game is on the arm of Joe Burrow, the same way it was in the first game when he threw over 400 yards and Chase went for 201. You got to exploit this secondary. And you know, as we talked about them being sort of comfortable in embracing the no mistakes, run it, be careful approach last week in Denver, to me, this is the opposite in a lot of ways. Now, you still can't turn it over and you have to be safe there. But the big plays and the onus, I think, has to fall on the passing game to take advantage of the biggest mismatch out there.
Yeah, I agree, but I just wonder with what the situation the Ravens are in, if they're gonna sit back in a zone and go uncharacteristic of what they are. They were already seeing that where they're not blitzing as much. And I get to that with Jeff. If they're gonna give the Bengals light boxes, is Zach gonna attack them the way we've seen him do in the past, or is he gonna put it on Joe's shoulders? But you're right, when you just look at the matchups, this should be Joe Burrow picking apart that depleted secondary. And especially, I know I mentioned it on Tuesday's pod and I said it was 5 days away, looked like rain. Now it looks like it's going to be upper 50s and sunny. It is perfect football weather. It's a perfect day to throw the ball around. And yeah, I could see that. I could also see them jumping out to an early lead and then kind of turtling up and getting more conservative and just kind of grinding it out. Who knows? They could keep attacking, but it feels like we haven't seen them do it a lot, jump off to fast starts. If they are able to do it, it'll be interesting to see which direction they go. If they keep staying aggressive and just try to completely bury the Ravens, or if they start running the ball and just trying to work the clock.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
I want to bring in a comment, and we'll squeaky card this Joe Burrow from his conversation with us on Sunday, even though we're now on Zooms totally during the week. So the card is sadly missed, RIP Cart, which We'll be back on Sunday, I guess, post game, but still, it's here in spirit. But we talked to Joe, and you know, the first question here I'm gonna bring you is him talking a little bit about how he's maybe playing some of his best football, and he touches on a topic of his pocket presence and mobility that I think is very important to his game. And then I had a question for him about, you know, that scene that came up on NFL Films of, look, if we can win this division, we can win the whole thing. And I specifically remember that clip, and you go back to that game against Baltimore and the fact they have them back here again, you can feel the same way if they can do the same thing to Baltimore here on Sunday. So here's a little bit of Joe Burrow from Wednesday.
You feel like you're playing your best ball of the season right now and over the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, I'm comfortable back there. I think I'm finally getting back to where I was pre-injury as far as my movement in the pocket and being able to extend the play. I've been able to do that a couple times these last few games that I've felt really comfortable in. I'm not even really thinking about it anymore, which is exciting for me because I wasn't really making those plays at the beginning of the year. So I'm finally getting back to myself, and you know, I think that's just going to open up even more for us.
There was a scene, I think it might have been like an NFL Films thing that caught you on the first Baltimore game on the sidelines saying, man, if we can win this division, we could win the whole thing. And was that game a realization moment for you about maybe what this team could possibly accomplish this year?
Yeah, I think it was around then when we realized, you know, how good we could be. Obviously, we've had some ups and downs throughout the year, and that's going to happen in the NFL, but you know, when we play Baltimore, everyone knows what Baltimore can do to teams. And you know, the way we went out and beat them last time, I think we all realized what we could be. And so that was exciting for us to get that win. And then you know, you put that behind us, and now we're here with everything on the line in this game.
There's Joe Burrow with us on Wednesday. There's something here I kind of want to touch on, and that is what we've seen in recent weeks, and most notably on Sunday against Denver, was Burrow's ability to feel the pocket presence, understand what's going on around him, make that split decision he's so good at processing, and either take off or hang in there. And Jay, you asked a question of him later in the press conference yesterday about his decision to do that and why he does that. And I thought his response was really good. Actually, I want to bring that in because it kind of reminded me the Cooper Kupp answer went viral the other day, where Cooper Kupp like went through everything he saw on a touchdown play in like 19 seconds. And it was, and everybody's like, this is amazing. Let me tell you how Joe Burrow processes things, within 2.5 seconds out there. Here's Jay asking, Joe Burrow about deciding whether to hang in and make the throw or take off.
You mentioned your comfort and your confidence in moving in the pocket. What about the opposite? It seemed like against Denver that there were times the pocket was collapsing and you didn't get out and escape. You stood in there till the last second. Or do you feel more confident standing in there and have a better feel in the pocket?
No, I think when you're trying to decide whether you need to move and escape the pocket or you need to stand in and make the throw, you got to determine the situation of the game and determine the coverage and the route that you have. If you have a route that is about to come open, you know, you want to sit in there and take the hit and make the throw. And a lot of times that's third down. That's, you know, third and 10, third and 8, where, you know, you have the right play against the right defense. You know, it's just a longer developing play that you're going to have to sit in and take a hit. And other times, you know the play that you have and you know the coverage that's being played, and you know you're not going to really have anything, and they're going to be able to cover the route concept that you have based on the coverage that they're playing. And so then you can, you know, slide in the pocket and escape, you know, quicker than if you think that you have a route that's going to come open. So I think it just determines, whatever determines that is the situation.
Look, you can talk all you want to about the Cooper Kupp answer, like what quarterbacks have to do and how Joe Burrow works this operation. I think that's one of those. He has to do all that in like 2.5 seconds if he's lucky, right? And that sort of instinctual decision make is kind of what sets him apart, Jay. You know, I mean, it showed up in Denver, where three times he ran and scrambled for first downs. And then you saw some of the biggest moments of the game. He hung in there and makes that throw to Tyler Boyd and takes the hit. You know, the instinct to know which one to do so quickly is his superpower.
It is. And I was really impressed with his answer. It could have been a Jay's Got Stats thing. If I were to go through every Joe Burrow transcript, that might have been the most words that he's ever spoken on any answer. It's not like he's short with us, but he gets to the point and he moves on. And that he was really expansive there. It was really good. And that was something that struck me watching that game in Denver is, you know, you've got these backup linemen in there and the pocket's collapsing. And there were so many times where he just stayed in there and waited for. It's not a matter of like when you, so many times you see it when a free runner's coming or not, maybe not even a free runner, but just someone who kind of works free of the block and the quarterback stands in there and knows they're going to take the hit. That's one thing. But as the pocket is collapsing and the pocket is collapsing and you know, anybody can reach out and grab you and pull you down at any second, for him to just stay in there and wait till one of the receivers in the progression gets a sliver of daylight. I was really impressed by it, especially for a second year guy.
It changes his game so remarkably when he has that confidence in his knee, because he feels like he can go that route if he needs to. Here's one for you. Paul's Got Stats. Through the first 9 games of the season, Burrow had just 4 non-QB sneak scrambles for a first down. Just 4 of them in the first 9 games. Last 5 games, he's done it 7 times, including 3 against Denver. You can sense that ability to go that route, to utilize that weapon if he feels like he needs to. And, you know, I was talking to Zach Taylor a little bit about the same concept, because he's mentioned multiple times recently, like, look, Joe, some of the best decision making that Joe Burrow is making is the throws that he's not making. And he talks about having confidence to call deep shots, knowing that it won't be shot called, shot taken, which Jay Morrison, I know you're familiar with that. unless it's at Tony's with Rumpelmintz at 2 a.m. Yeah. It's not always shot called, shot taken. Sometimes it needs to be shot called and understand when to get off of it and when to take it. And Burrow has been great at that, and it allows the play caller to keep calling them. The way he's great at it, too, is seeing it, understanding it's not there, but not letting it turn into a negative play. Maybe sometimes it turns into a sack, but he's been throwing the ball away. He's been scrambling for first downs. He's been understanding how he's been taking the check down when it's there. You know, I think that's important to have confidence in, you know, as a play caller, to know that no matter what you do, how aggressive you want to be, it's not going to end up in a worst case scenario. And Burrow's been really good at that, particularly of late now, as we've seen, he's gone 2 straight games without interception. And we really haven't seen him putting the team in harm's way in a big way in a number of weeks.
And don't forget about the other element to that of him sliding and moving in the pocket and extending is something you wrote about earlier this year, just how good they are at the off-script plays. And we saw it in that Denver game where he bought time and hit Jamar Chase for the 45-yard bomb and got called back because of a holding penalty. But those are the kind of things that can erupt. It doesn't have to be shot called, shot taken. They can come up with shots on their own off-script, and not just come up with them, but hit them, be really good at it. So it is. It's all just part of the ascension of a young quarterback. And I think he's climbing faster than I think maybe not he didn't expect, but I think he's climbing even faster than people outside the organization thought he would.
Need I mention 4th and 5 against San Francisco and the off script play there. Here's the other part of that is when you look at since week 10, so we're just talking the last 6 games here for both of these teams. Here's some drive rates. And then something else I want to make sure I mention here. Offensive points per drive since in the last 6 weeks. Bengals are 11th in the NFL, 2.17. Baltimore is 21st. You know, they've found a little something with Tyler Huntley, who's kind of sparked their offense a little bit. And if you watch the game against Green Bay, they moved the ball up and down the field really well. Mm-hmm.
But they still have kind of overall struggled to get it going offensively. Defensive points per drive the last 6 weeks. Bengals are sixth, 1.55. Baltimore's ninth. It's amazing that they're still in the top 10 points per drive when you consider how beat up they are. Here's the thing. Over that period, their rush defense has been great. They're third in yards per carry allowed. Like they're still stuffing everything when teams try to run on them. They're sixth in defensive rush success percentage, so they're finding success at better rates than almost anybody stopping the run. Their pass defense is bad, as you might imagine. When your secondary is totally wiped out, when you don't have any good matchups out there, it's awful. They are 28th in yards per attempt allowed and a whopping 12.3 yards per completion. That is far and away worse than the NFL. Teams are ripping them for big plays. Who connects on more big play touchdowns than any quarterback in the NFL this year? I'll wait for your answer. It shouldn't take long. Joe Burrow. Yeah. I mean, he has more than anyone by a long shot. The matchup sets up for you to replicate the first game in so many ways. And, you know, we have played this game of Zach Taylor's trust in Joe Burrow and the want to continue to establish the run and knocking your head against the wall for a good cause, right? Mm-hmm. That's fine. I think this feels like a game where you got to kind of turn it over to Joe a little bit more, a lot more, actually, specifically early in trying to gain the lead. We talked about this strategy earlier in the season. Burrow throws to give you the big lead. Mixon closes it and puts it away. I think that's where this needs to be. Baltimore is a team that has had slow start issues. Take advantage of that. I think it's a Burrow game.
And, look what Chase did against the Ravens the first game. And then Higgins, three straight 100-yard games until last week. And then last week, Boyd comes up huge. You've got it seems like it's been kind of one guy or the other. This would be a game, it would feel like, with how beat up that secondary is, that Burrow could really get all three of those guys involved and just kind of, pick which way he wants to go. And maybe we see all three of them top 60, 70 yards. You're right. You look at the one guy, Brandon Williams, their nose tackle, is one of the best run stoppers in the league. He is not affected by any of this. He is still healthy and he is still playing well in the middle there. And their linebackers are mostly unaffected by the injuries and the COVID issues. So as good as they are against the run, that may still be the case on Sunday. So yeah, you could see them really kind of leaning on Joe and letting him carry him. And really, you're going to have to see that if they're going to get in the postseason, they can't keep starting slow the way they have. Eventually they're going to fall in a hole they can't get out of. They've got to at some point come out and just explode in that first quarter. And this would be the perfect week to do it.
There's no doubt. Let's get to Jeff Zrebeck, your conversation with him, because there's a whole lot of good stuff in here. That's going to be a big deal come Sunday. So here's Jay with Jeff.
Jeff, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Doing well. Merry Christmas to you.
You as well.
My first question, I'm going to guess you can't answer, but I'm just going to ask for opinion. Are they going to play this game on time Sunday at 1 p.m.?
I think it kind of depends what happens in the next 48 hours or so. There's enough guys that went on the reserve COVID list last week where – they should be getting a couple of these guys back in the next couple of days. As long as that happens, I think they'll be good to go, or at least have enough players where it's not a major issue. But if you have many more days like yesterday where they put five guys on the reserve COVID list, if that happens again today and if there's continued cases up until the next 48 hours, I think it's going to have to be addressed. I mean, it's not a competitive situation anymore. It's then you simply run out of players, like even on their defense. Yesterday, they had 13 total players practicing from their roster on the defense. And it's tough to get ready for a game that way. And if you lose more, it opens the question like, what do you do? How do you find 48 players to be on the field Sunday?
I mean, how do they even run a practice like that? You spend a couple minutes on scout team, then you run over and do your stuff on defense. That doesn't make any sense.
And you know what? They moved it inside, which you know what that means. That means the media shut out, which, you know, it was windy here and it's cold. But I imagine there's a gamesmanship aspect, not wanting us to see too much about what's going on and you know, the whole situation with the quarterback. But they were only planning to have a walkthrough anyway. But I imagine you'd have to have some assistant coaches lining up at a certain spots, you know, to at least give you some different looks.
Well, you mentioned it, the quarterback situation. You know, in your opinion, are they better off with a hobbled Lamar or a healthy Huntley?
I think a healthy Huntley, you know, and I'm not. You know, I'm not drinking the Tyler Huntley Kool-Aid. I mean, already around here, the Raven fans are talking about, you know, maybe we can get a number one pick for him this offseason, or maybe, you know, we should trade Lamar and you know, hand over the offense. All that is ridiculous. I am comfortable saying, and Huntley gives him a chance to win. I mean, he does some things well. He gets rid of the ball quickly. He has a really good idea against the blitz. He's not Lamar dynamic with the ball in his hands, but he can make plays with his arm and his legs. He's played way better than I ever thought. I mean, we're talking about a second year undrafted free agent, and you watch him and you look around and you say, you know, this guy has an idea, you know, he can put you at least in a chance to win. And, you know, but all the other stuff is complete. It's just ridiculous and overreaction like we get in the NFL. But the thing about Lamar is, you know, he wasn't playing very well even before the ankle injury. So he was sort of in a month-long rut. Now you take the ankle injury and he hasn't practiced for, about 10 days now. We'll see if he's on the field today. But as it is, I mean, you're getting a guy who wasn't playing that well and who's now probably not 100% and who hasn't practiced. I think today's a big day for him. If he's able to come back to practice, I think that puts him in good position as long as he's able to do something at practice. But yeah, I mean, if he's 50-60%, you know, I don't think you can play him. I don't think he's going to help you like that, you know, but he's your franchise guy. So if he's anywhere close to 100, I think you have to run him out there and take your chances.
You know, looking at the numbers, maybe it is a result of him not playing well and the ankle injury, but it seems like the Ravens are running or passing the ball a whole lot more this year than they have throughout Lamar's tenure. Has it been a philosophy change? Has it been by necessity, or has it just been a fact that they've got some more weapons in the receiving game this year?
Yeah, I think it's kind of all of the above. They definitely wanted to evolve offensively and become a little more dangerous throwing the football and challenge defenses down the field more. You know, so I think that's definitely part of a philosophy change, or at least kind of how they view it as more of the evolution of the offense. But, you know, a lot of factors go into it. Yeah, their receiving core is much more representative of an NFL receiving group than what they've had in the past. They've fallen behind in a lot of games, you know, they have. I mean, they've not been a slow starting team, or excuse me, they've not been a fast starting team at all. And they've had to throw the ball, you know, a lot to get back into some games. So, you know, that has a lot to do with it. And, you know, you look at the running back group and they have three guys they picked up off the street, you know, like Devontae Freeman's played okay and you give him credit, but, you know, nobody's worried about, you know, stopping him and, you know, Latavius Murray hasn't brought a whole lot of juice. And then they got a kid off the practice squad. So I think they've almost had to, Jay. I mean, they're just not the same. You know, the numbers look pretty good with their rushing, but a lot of that is quarterback scrambled and off some unscripted stuff. They just haven't been able to line up and run the ball really well and bludgeon teams like they have in the last couple of years. So they've had to become a little more pass happy than I'm sure they would probably prefer.
Yeah, Mark Andrews, first 1,000-yard receiver since 2016, and Hollywood's only 91 yards away. If he gets there, first time since the first year of the franchise that they would have 2,000-yard receivers.
Yeah, you know, Andrews is just I mean, he's carried them right now. Yeah. I mean, he's been the guy, you know, and I think people worried about his numbers dropping off when Jackson went out. And he's actually been better with Huntley. You know, he's been the last 2 weeks, he's kind of, you know, been so much of their offense. And, you know, we'll see. You know, he certainly put himself, you know, obviously Travis Kelce didn't go anywhere. We'll see how that winds up. But Andrews certainly has got to be first team all pro consideration. His numbers next to Kelce's are almost identical at the moment. So that'll be interesting. The Marquise Brown thing, you know, he's still been heavily involved, and to the Ravens' credit, in the past with Marquise Brown, he's disappeared. You're like, why, you know, where is he? Why aren't they doing different things to get the ball in his hands? Why isn't he running more, you know, branches on the route tree? Why is it, you know, people would call him a one-trick pony and all that. The funny thing is that kind of trick has kind of disappeared in recent weeks. He's just not making any big plays, but he's getting a ton of stuff underneath. They're getting the ball in his hands. You know, you probably know the numbers offhand, Jay, but I think he was targeted 13 or 14 times Sunday. Now, that was kind of a result of the Packers were kind of afraid to let him beat him deep, and they were just giving him 5-6 yards. And, you know, Huntley is well more apt to take those 5-6 than Lamar has been. So they're doing a good job getting the ball in his hands. I would say overall he's had a pretty nice season, but he has tapered off a little bit after the start. The question going forward is the Ravens have to work so hard to get down the field so that they don't create big plays. And they need to get Marquise Brown behind the defense rather than consistently dumping the ball off or taking 5-6 yard outs. And they just haven't been able to do it. I think the Ravens are the only team in the league without a 50-yard plus offensive play. And, you know, that's where Marquise Brown comes in. He's the guy that's supposed to take the top off the defense. And while he's been very busy and productive with the ball in his hand, the kind of the big play angle has kind of vanished from their offense.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
Maybe the bigger issue with the Ravens is on the defense. I mean, you talked about it off the top with all the COVID situation, but I mean, they've just injuries have killed them throughout the year. Is, you know, they started 5-1, 3-5 since. Is how much of this kind of tailspin? I mean, 3 losses in a row. They're one away from tying the longest losing streak under Harbaugh. How much of that is attributed just simply to the injuries?
Yeah, you know, we all as reporters get sick of hearing the next man up phrase. I mean, it's us, you know, uttered in every building. And you know, I guess some of it's true, but there becomes a time where you run out of healthy NFL caliber football players to throw out there on Sundays. And, you know, for all the talk, and I'm not really defending Harbaugh's decision per se, but for all the talk about going for two there against Green Bay, I mean, you know, you had practice squad players guarding Davante Adams, you know, and your secondary is filled with practice squad players right now. And, you know, it's not a good situation. It hasn't been, you know, ironically, Jay, the defense has during their little losing streak or in recent weeks, their defense has actually played a little bit better. And the offense not being able to score over 20 points until the pack. I mean, in the 5 games before the Packers game, the offense was only averaging like 16.5 points, and that's not going to get it done. And even though the defense had picked it up, it just wasn't enough. But now you're getting to the point where, you know, right now they have 3 outside linebackers left. We don't know if, you know, we don't know if positive tests over the next 48, 72 hours. If they lose more there, they don't have anybody on the practice squad. I don't know what they do. They're down to 3 inside linebackers. They're down to 2 cornerbacks and they're down to 2 safeties. They just don't have enough bodies right now. Now you can pluck guys off the practice squad, you know, in certain spots there's, you know, they do have a lot of defensive backs in the practice squad will help. Not a lot of linebackers though. So you're going to wind up having to rely on a secondary with mostly practice squad guys. And, you know, look, no excuses. Everybody goes through stuff in this league, but you're not going to beat good teams like that. I mean, it's just the reality. And I think, you know, the defense with losing Humphrey and losing Peters and losing Wolf before he even played a game, Calais Campbell's been banged up. Matabuke and Houston are probably out for Sunday. That's just, you know, you're talking about a major talent drain there. And you know, you can play hard, you can play well coached, but at some points you have to make some plays. And they just don't have enough playmakers left on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I was going to ask you last week, they blitzed 5.9%. I mean, that's the previous, before this year, the lowest Wink had ever blitzed up an opponent in a game was 19%. Now, maybe that had to do with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
But have you seen them kind of get away from their philosophy because of these injuries and play a little more coverage as opposed to being more aggressive?
Yeah. I think they've had to. And, you know, it's against Wink Martindale's nature. I know everybody knows the book on the Ravens defense. It's been the book for years. And, Martindale is even more aggressive in a lot of ways than his predecessors, but he's had to dial it back. There's no question. I mean, we've seen against certain, you know, star quarterbacks, Mahomes, they did it early in the season. They barely blitzed. Rodgers, they barely blitzed. And, you know, I at one point during one game, I'm trying to think of the game. It was a recent game. Maybe it was the Steelers game in Pittsburgh. Harbaugh kind of called out Wink Martindale. Someone asked him what happened defensively, and he just said, "We got caught in the cover zero blitz. You keep calling it, you're going to get burned on it," pretty much was the message. And John kind of walked that back a couple days later, but you know, it was, the message was pretty much sent. I mean, they've been very blitz happy. It's helped them a lot. I mean, they've had one of the best third down defenses in football, and that's partly because their ability to get blitz and get free runners to the quarterback. But, you know, you can't continually put your cornerbacks on an island when you're two or three cornerbacks are practice squad elevations, you know? So I think Martindale's had to adjust given his personnel, but it's been a goal. It's been a goal this year to be less blitz reliant overall because, I'll go back to that game where the Bengals were playing the Jaguars, you know, and the Jaguars defensive coordinator is Joe Cullen, the former Ravens defensive line coach, and Burrow said, and he audibled, I think, and you guys can correct me, but he audibled in a key spot and a third down. And I think it was a wide receiver screen and they took it to the house or they made a big play on it. And Burrow said after the game, you know, their defensive coordinator is from the Ravens. You know, we knew they were going to blitz on that play. And he called the right play to get out of it. Not, you know, certainly the book gets out on you and you do have to adjust. And I think they have tried to dial it back a little bit in that sense.
Yeah. The play, it was a wide receiver screen, but they were lined up so that the ball had to go to a tight end and he got into field position, or he got into position for the game winning field goal after that. And, you know, talking about the blitz, I mean, the Ravens only forced four turnovers in the last seven games. I think a lot of that has been from the lack of blitzing too, but that's something that is uncharacteristic for them. The last thing I wanted to ask you about is, I guess, what a lot of people are talking about with Harbaugh and these 2-point conversions in two of the last 3 weeks. I think we've all seen the clip of Mark Andrews saying that it was the right call, and it sounds like the team has his back. But what about the fan base? Do you think people are on board with this type of aggression, given the situation they're in, or is it a lot of head scratching saying, "Geez, you know, could be 10-4 right now as opposed to 8-6"?
I think it's a little of both. You know, you get in every fan base, you have your chunk of it where they judge the call on whether it works or not, you know, like they don't look past that and look at the rationale for and consider the other factors. And they're the same people that if it worked, they'd be hailing Harbaugh for coach of the year. Now that it doesn't work, it's John Harbaugh's going to keep us out of the playoffs. I think it's split. I think, you know, Harbaugh largely has the support of the fan base. The fan base is more anti-offensive coordinator Greg Roman. And I think Sunday that was more the reaction, you know, good decision, terrible play call. But yeah, sure, he's under some scrutiny. And the thing is, Jay, and you know, I'm not predicting a very close game Sunday, but it would be very interesting if it came down to another situation. Could Harbaugh possibly do this again? I don't think you can possibly do it. You can't go for it for a third time and risk losing a game like that. But we know his conviction. We know John, you know, Harbaugh can be a little stubborn in his ways, but it'll be interesting. I think, you know, people don't want to talk about this around here, but I think those decisions show what he kind of thinks of his roster, to be honest with you. They have a chance here to steal two wins by getting 2 yards. It's not been, you know, they're kind of decimated on defense, and let's take our shot here because we probably won't get a shot again. I mean, John's not going to say that because he's not going to express, you know, skepticism with his roster, but I think that's pretty much where they're at. You know, it's tough to say a team's overachieved, which has lost 3 straight games. But in a lot of ways this year, they've won a lot of games they shouldn't have because of their aggressiveness. You can't really have it both ways. You know, if you're going to be aggressive, I think you have to stay that way. The question Sunday was, 42 seconds left is an eternity. Aaron Rodgers was going to get the ball back if they made it and have 42 seconds left, end a timeout, and he's probably getting the ball at his own 25. And he's facing a secondary that has practice squad players littered across it. So I don't know how many people would have liked the Ravens' decision to stop that anyway, to keep him from at least setting Crosby up for field goal. And then who knows what happens from there. But I think it's a reflection of the team they have, what they have left, just trying to find a way to grind out and maybe get to that 10-win mark and steal a win here and there. And, you know, it works and it doesn't work, you know, so there's some criticism, no doubt. And, you know, Harbaugh's pretty established where he's fine with it being on him. I think the locker room's firmly behind him. You know, I think they understand, like, do you trust your ability to get 2 yards or do you want to put it in the hands of your defense trying to stop a first ballot Hall of Famer twice, you know, with 42 seconds left and again, maybe in overtime. So I had no problem with the call. But again, I wasn't a huge fan of the play call, obviously. And that's the thing. They're now 2 of 8 and third down on 2-point conversions this year. And, you know, it's the old, you can keep banging your head against the wall and doing the same thing, or do you try something else? It would be fascinating. I know there's been questions here, you know, Zach Taylor is, they've not come from behind all year. Are they 0 for 24 when trailing in the fourth quarter or something?
Is that the stat? They trailed in the third quarter against the Broncos and came back, but yeah, they have not overcome a third.
It would be
deficit at the end of the third quarter.
I'm not predicting close game, but it would be fascinating if this game comes down to the fourth quarter to see the decision making on both sides.
Well, hey, that's great stuff, Jeff. I really appreciate you jumping on with us. I hope for your sake this game's played on time, but if it's not and they delay it, you are welcome to come up and spend some time with me in Hamilton, because as Joe Burrow told everybody, there's nothing to do in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent many of New Year's Eves in Cincinnati over the years because the Ravens always seem to play, and I know this is different schedule, but the Ravens always seem to be there in week 17 in past years, so why not spend Christmas night there too, you know?
Well, hey, again, I really appreciate you jumping on with us, and look forward to seeing you on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday or whenever it is they play.
Sounds good. Always enjoy it. See you guys. Hope you and your families have a great holiday.
Great stuff from Jeff, and I have notes with exclamation points next to like 6 different things that he said. The fact that it's so clear cut how much better they would be with a healthy Huntley than a hobbled Lamar is wild, but I don't think you can debate that. How good Mark Andrews has been is something worth keeping an eye on Sunday when you consider the Bengals versus the tight end and what George Kittle was able to do in keeping San Francisco in this. You know, the idea that you're now, you know, they have been man and blitz, right, forever. And that's both of those things play into Joe Burrow's strengths a little bit. The fact that they're dialing those back, I think you could see them dial that back even more against Burrow when you consider how he's played. And then the line that stuck out to me most, those decisions that John Harbaugh is making show what he thinks of his roster.
You know, they're just, it's stealing games via miracle. It's like the Baltimore season in a nutshell. From Justin Tucker's 66-yarder to these two-point conversions at the end of these wild comebacks, the Chicago game, where Huntley came in and, like, drove him the length of the field with almost no time left as a backup. I mean, it's stealing games via miracle has been their method of victory or a method of gameplay, you know? And so it's hard to imagine it being any other potential, you know, way that it could go on Sunday. That's just the games Ravens have played.
They have played seven games this year decided by 3 points or less. The NFL record is 9. Bengals are right there at 6. Jeff said a couple times he doesn't expect this to be a close game. I do. I think this is a field goal game. There's so much on the line, division rivals that know each other so well. I know how beat up they are, but I have a feeling this one's going to be tight.
We will get to those predictions in a bit, along with Growler Bet, Run Passer Boot, and some stats that we'll have for you. But it is time, Jay, for the airing of the grievances. Get the pole out of the crawl space. I got a lot of problems with you people, and you're going to hear about it. Okay, I had to rewatch the Festivus episode. Like I always just, it's like a yearly thing. I feel like I need to rewatch the Festivus episode. It's great because it's connected to the bagel strike, which it's hard. I can't really hang out near a bagel store or be inside of one and not just want to go no bagel, no bagel, no bagel, no bagel to people just pretending the Kramer on strike is just one of my absolute favorites. Also the home of Yamahama. It's Fright Night, which is also another great sign. It's a fantastic episode with lots of great stuff in it. But yeah, a Festivus for the rest of us, a Festivus miracle. We've got grievances to air. I'll start, Jay.
Okay.
And you can't air grievances without starting with the Pro Bowl, which as a whole deserves grievances. No matter what would have happened, as a whole, you have to look at this whole thing and say, come on, what is even happening here? Why are we talking about this? If we're going to do it, though, let's do it. I had one. Would you air grievances of Lamar over Joe Burrow as the third AFC quarterback?
No, my grievance is take the vote away from the fans. Yeah. Let the coaches and the players, maybe the media, love you guys, love all you listeners, but most of you don't watch that much football. There's some of you that do that grind the tape, but it's just – the fact that fan vote counts for 1/3, I just and now that, as you mentioned, incentives are rolled into this, it's just take it away from them. I mean, Hakeem Adeniji was in the top 10 the entire time just because his name begins with A, and fans didn't know who was good at guard and who wasn't, so they just clicked like the first guy. You were
like second at one point.
Yeah. just take the fan vote out of it, or let them vote, but don't count it. Just don't tell them you're not really counting
them.
Let them think they're involved. But quit releasing the fan vote tallies as you go and just let them think they're involved, but really leave it up to the coaches and the players.
I am not, you know, trying to say that we deserve respect or responsibility, that we know any more than the average Joe in a lot of ways. But I do think a third to the media, a third to coaches, and a third to players would be a better way to get a more proper representation in the game. At least the media, we're paid and we have the time to dive into those decisions. But that's neither here nor there. My issue, I don't know if it was a huge issue. I wish there should have been more love for Chidobe Awuzie. Not even mentioned in an alternate. And he actually, and again, I'm not, PFF grades are not going to be something that I'm going to sit here and stand on the soapbox about. Like, whatever. Some are good. Some are bad. Some I think are right, some I don't think are. I think it's easier to grade on the edges. You know more of exactly what happened and what went on than you did in the trenches, where there's a lot of whose responsibility really was that, what were they really trying to do. It's sort of like OTAs. Like OTAs just are all about, because it's easier just for those guys just run around and do that. You can see it more, you can judge it better. Chidobe Awuzie is the top graded AFC cornerback by PFF, And the four spots went to J.C. Jackson, Xavien Howard, Denzel Ward, and Kenny Moore, who are great, who are fantastic. That's fine. Like, I'm not going to get into those arguments. But the fact that we're not even talking about, like, a deep alternate, it's people not really paying attention, whatever. There needs to be more respect on the season that Chido has had. He deserves it. He's been incredible, but people just don't realize it because it's here and it's an anonymous defense and he's kind of an anonymous player that people don't really pay that much attention to. And he doesn't have a ton of interceptions. And so for that fact, it's like, but he is PFF's highest graded AFC corner.
Yeah, I made some calls to try to find the answer to this, and nobody really knows, but I don't know how deep they go on the alternate scale for certain positions. I mean, clearly at cornerback, they go at least five alternates deep because that's what Mike Hilton was. And Mike Hilton has had a really good year, but he hasn't been better than Awuzie. It is stunning that Awuzie wasn't at least a fifth alternate at cornerback. And, you know, I'll throw one in there for DJ Reader too. I don't know how deep they went at defensive tackle, but for him to not even be listed as an alternate in the season he's having, just a travesty. And again, I guess a lot of what the game has become is those three techniques and the guys, the Aaron Donalds and the way Geno used to be, those defensive tackles that are getting sacks, and that's not DJ Reader's game, but he's been maybe the best player on this defense. I guess you could go Hendrickson, but he's been one of their best players on defense all year. And for him not even to get an alternate sniff is just, it's wrong.
Yeah. But you know what else is wrong? The Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
As an entire operation. I'm going to mention it for the third time.
I will go cover it if they want me to, though, because it's in Vegas this year.
Yeah, I know you would. Maybe you'll get to like fly a helicopter over the Grand Canyon again. Shout out Paul Malloy. So that's my first grievance. Do you have a grievance?
Well, if I can go off topic and go away from the Bengals, yeah, I'm still mad about Arby's taking ham off the menu. Never going to get over that.
You're going back to the Arby's ham grievance?
I mean, it just never goes away.
I mean, you're not wearing your meat sweats right now.
I'm not. And shout out to Patrick Schwing. He's probably in town. He said he was coming in town this weekend to see the Bengals-Ravens game. But yes, thank you for the gift cards and the meat sweats. And I have worn them, but it's disappointing. Every time I say I'm going to go get some food and wife says, where are you going? And I say Arby's, of course. And she's like, no, thanks. Before, if they had ham, she always got the ham sliders. But now she's like, I'll just make something here.
Shout out to our listeners who did drop the Urban Meyer as the yes. Arby's shift manager photo into our tweets. That was nice. I have a lot of respect for that. I have an airing of the grievances here. Quote, fortunately, there's not a ton to do in Cincinnati, so it's not nobody's going to be going out to clubs and bars and getting COVID every weekend. Joe Burrow. That escalated quickly.
It sure did.
It went from a question about how different are you since the last game against Baltimore to now we've gone viral to the fact that everyone's going to make jokes about how the city of Cincinnati sucks. And there's like, as I feel like I have a really good handle on Cincinnatians, as I think you do too, Jay. Mm. The provincial nature of us and the inferiority complex that we all kind of have in a lot of ways, this is just like the worst thing to hear. It cuts too deep for, you know, beacon of civic pride, number 9, who you feel like is the one, you know, a lot of people I think feel like he's making Cincinnati cool again, to say Cincinnati is in fact not cool. There's nothing to do here. No bars or clubs. Yeah, yeah. It, of course, was ran with and became this thing that everyone wanted to get out there as quickly as possible so they can point and laugh at. And it's like the ultimate. It felt a little gotcha-y of he says this thing and now everyone's going to go run to get it out there because it's going to be fun to laugh at Cincinnati, you know? And he said it, and it would have been, I'm sure it would have been a topic no matter what, whether anybody like why it got quickly thrown out there or not. But that's just the nature of the world we're in. But I just hate that it comes to that. Look, if you were coming to Cincinnati looking for club life, you get what you deserve. And you get very little. Like, this is not a club town. This is not a, as fun as the Dora is and lots of places are to go out, it's not like crazy nightlife. It's, you know, like, this isn't Vegas. This isn't Miami. This isn't New York. This isn't LA. It is different that way. I'll go again, though. I will put the food and beverage Cincinnati community up against absolutely anyone pound for pound in the entire country. I will put the local arts and access to big time sports, huge college hoops, NFL, oldest team in the history of baseball, great venues, music venues that are on the rise now even more.
Mm-hmm.
Jay, you know that. Even the BP in Hamilton gets good concerts. Aronoff Center, all of that community, parks, I will put up against anyone for a city of this size anywhere. And that may not like resonate with the average 20-something NFL player. I get it. Who maybe is, you know, maybe you just spent time in New Orleans or you want to go play in Miami. I get it. But the fact that it becomes this like joke of there's nothing to do in Cincinnati is just hysterical. And the fact that everyone wants to get cheap laughs off of that when they've never experienced this place or really been here drives me bananas. That becomes like some piece of the conversation and it's going to be a chance for people to make like chili jokes. Who people have no idea anything about what actually this place is really about. And that is why it's maddening to me as someone who has that provincial inferiority complex, civic pride that I kind of do, that all of a sudden this is now the conversation. Not that he said it, whatever, or that it blew up, whatever. It's just that now it's now like this is the conversation that everybody is going to see come across their phone. And that's just, it's my airing of the grievances on that one.
You know who's at the top of the list of people who don't know what this city is all about? Joe Burrow. He never leaves his house. He doesn't go out. How does he even know?
He showed up in a pandemic.
Exactly. And even if it wasn't, he just seems like that kind of, he would rather stay home and watch Netflix or grind film. He's not the going out type. Yeah, he smirked when he said it. I don't think it was kind of a gotcha thing with the way it got put out there so quick and like every TV station jumped on it. And I was watching some local news last night and they were all running with it. But it wasn't a leading question at all. He kind of went that way on his own. So it wasn't a gotcha, but you know, Ben Baby, who was, I think, the first one that put it out there, he made a good point. He's like, I wonder if Joe Burrow's ever going to say anything fun again, because he is just getting roasted over this. And I agree with you. It is a total mischaracterization. There is so much to do here, and it's not going to compare with an LA or a New Orleans or anything like that. But I mean, if you can't find a good time in Cincinnati, you're not looking.
And that's fine. People can pile on and dunk on them all they want to. It's whatever. My only other airing of the grievances, and I'll be done, would be, there is a piece from Tom Pelissero, and this great piece talks to a bunch of GMs, execs from a bunch of teams, and talks about awards for the year and who should win them. Goes through them all, you know, offensive defensive player of the year. Ja'Marr Chase narrowly edged out by Mac Jones for offensive rookie of the year amongst that group of people. And then they got to executive of the year. And they name off, like, a Bill Belichick ended up being the one they gave it to. And there's a bunch of different, there's about seven or eight different execs and or groups mentioned, even mentioned the group of the Dallas Cowboys of Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones. And not a mention of the Bengals in there. And that's, I have a grievance with that. I mean, I'm not saying they should win it. I'm not saying Bill Belichick doesn't deserve it for what he's been able to do in New England and the Mac Jones pick and the spending spree working out for them. But when you read through the explanation for why New England and Bill Belichick deserves it, it's hard not to think, are they actually writing about Cincinnati? Getting the number one pick right? Taking advantage of a free agent spending spree in a year where most weren't, and how hard that is to do? Pulling a team that struggled last year back up into relevancy? Like, was that written about Belichick, or was that written about Duke Tobin and the family? Because aren't we talking about the same thing? I don't think they should necessarily win, but the fact that you're not even including them in the conversation amongst those people, I'm surprised by that. And I think it's just that shows kind of the general, as we all know, exists and is real and relevant, and that's fine. Just general disrespect, I think, that the rest of the league has for this ownership group. But, you know, that's probably me just broadly brushing.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about getting the first round pick, right? The spending and free agency. What about taking the risk and taking a kicker in the fifth round? And having that payoff, what's this team's record right now if they don't have Evan McPherson? And it's just, it's been impressive. I know a lot of people like to bang on Mike Brown and Duke even, but if you're saying that this team is where it's at right now, in spite of the front office, which basically by leaving them out of that conversation, you are. I mean, who are you giving the credit to? Is it all Joe Burrow? Is it all Zach Taylor? I think the front office deserves as much credit as anybody else for where this team is right now.
Yeah, I wrote about it this season and you know, back, I think it was actually after the first Baltimore game, about how at a certain point you've got to point out that every controversial debate that was had this offseason about what the Bengals should and shouldn't do, they were proven right on. I mean, really, for the most part. And including those involving their three Pro Bowlers, Trey Hendrickson over Carl Lawson,
yep.
Jamar Chase over Panay Sewell, paying Joe Mixon. Now, we know how I stand on that. I still disagree. But still, he has been a big part of this team and this offense and made the Pro Bowl and all that. And, you know, that's all part of this equation, too. Let's get back into this game, Jay. And, we'll start out with your stats. Jay, you've got some stats. Well, first of all, a record that's out there. You mentioned Evan McPherson. It's kind of fun that he has a chance to tie Justin Tucker's a record that Justin Tucker is tied for most 50-plus yard field goals in a season. Justin Tucker is tied for the record with 10. Evan McPherson currently has 9. It'd be kind of fun if he could do that with Justin Tucker in the building. Maybe do it twice.
Yeah.
Take the actual record.
Also, sharing that record is Brandon McManus, who he went head-to-head against last week in Denver. And then the other one is Blair Walsh, who, like McPherson, did it as a rookie. So, yeah, he's one 50-yarder away from tying the record. And I should have looked this up. I don't know where Tucker is this year, but it would surprise me if Evan doesn't break that record. I mean, he only needs two 50-yard field goals in the last three games, and we've seen they've got all the faith in the world in him to send him out there well beyond 50. So, and you have to figure these games are going to be tight. These last three games, they're going to maybe need a big field goal at the end of a half or at the end of the game. So I think he gets it. Whether somebody else beats him this year and gets more than he does, that's a different question, but I'd be stunned if he doesn't end the year with 11 or more 50-plus yard field goals.
What other stats you got, Jay?
Okay, so I was looking back. The Bengals beat the Steelers by at least 14 points in both games this year, and they beat the Ravens by more than 14. So I was, when was the last time that's happened? And then I went beyond. I was like, well, what about just total? How many times since the AFC North was formed in 2002 have the Bengals beat the Steelers by double digits or by 14 points? And how many times have they beat the Ravens by 14 points? Well, from 2002 to 2020, they did it 6 times total. They've done it 3 this year. It could go to 4 on Sunday. The last time that they swept those teams in a season was the last time they swept the entire division, which was 2009. That's the only time in AFC North history that they've swept the Steelers and the Ravens. So that those are both on the line on Sunday if they can knock off the Ravens. And then I was wondering, you know, the Ravens are known for defense, and Ja'Marr Chase had this huge 201-yard game. So I was wondering, what's the Bengals' record for most receiving yards in a season against the Ravens? And it's 287, so that means Ja'Marr would need 86 to tie, 87 to beat it on Sunday. You have any guess on who might have that record? I can guess who you're going to guess, and it'll be wrong.
All right, well, so I'm going to have to play off that then. I'm going to say T.J. Houshmandzadeh.
And you nailed it. Yes, sir. Yes. 2004 had a 116-yard game and a 187-yard game.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would have said AJ. If you wouldn't have dropped that line, I probably would have said Chad.
I thought you were leaning AJ Green because it seemed like he just always tortured the Ravens. Yeah. But yeah, I was surprised to see that it was Houshmandzadeh.
I'll take it. How about that? I'll take a little win. I honestly don't remember if we – between the live room and the Tuesday episode and an hour with Mo, and now back here again. I did a half hour on Baltimore radio the other day. I don't remember when and where I've said certain things. So if I've already gone through this stat before, I apologize. But the history of translating the second game, you know, is quite remarkable. So what I mean by that is, you win by 2 touchdowns at least in the first game of in a division like they did against Pittsburgh, and followed up by doing so again. They did it in the first game against Baltimore. Can they do it again? What are the odds of that? How often does that happen? The last 2 years, teams are 18-4 in the second game. Now, not in blowing them out again, but just in winning. Their record in the second game after winning the first game by at least 2 touchdowns is 18-4 the last 2 years. 2 of those losses are the Steelers' meltdown last year at the end of the season when they all of a sudden just fell apart as a team. The Bengals were responsible for one of those, 27-17 on Monday Night Football. Again, I apologize if I've already said this. I just don't remember where and when I've said all these things anymore. There's just too many hours of me rambling into microphones for no reason. So, all right, let's get down to it. Growler bet. Jay, what are you thinking for growler bet?
All right, we're going to go with the game's longest rush plus the game's longest pass plus the game's longest field goal.
Okay. The Ravens are giving up some long passes. So that's, you know, if we were run, pass, or booting, which will be longest, I would probably be taking pass, which might, maybe that's controversial, but that's not the question here. So I'm going to say a 14-yard run, and we'll do a 56-yard pass to get us up to 70. And then I will do a 51-yard field goal to get us to 121 as my growler bet answer.
That is the exact same number I had.
Really?
I had 20, 48, and 52. So I guess I'll go 131 just to keep the palindrome in play.
You can just pick an over-under on that. Do you want to go over or under that number?
Over under your 121.
Over under the 121. You going to take the over then?
Yeah, I'll go over.
122 for you, 121 for me. We'll play it over under then. I don't like this as a growler bet. Is it going to be too easy? Is this too winnable?
Maybe, but what if Ja'Marr Chase has another? What do you have, 81-yarder?
Well, the thing is they even each other out.
Yeah.
They even each other out. How about this? You need to get 2 numbers correct. I need all 3 legs. I need all 3 legs from you, and you don't have to get them all right. You need to get one of the three legs right and the total correct.
Yeah, that works.
So you either get the longest run correct, you get the longest pass correct, or the longest field goal correct and the total correct. So you need two of the four numbers to be correct in order to win the delicious 50 West beer. Still some OUOES scattered around the city if you want to. They had it on draft up there at 50. But if you want some delicious 50 West beer, I need two of the four legs. Hashtag Bengals Growler Bet or pdaner@theathletic.com. Run pass or boot time. What do you got?
I think I've got a one that's pretty pertinent to the game here. We're going to go Ravens rushing yards. The Ravens are their number three rushing offense. The Bengals are their number four rushing defense. Ravens are averaging 144 per game. The Bengals are averaging allowing 95. So that there's a big range there. So the first prong is Ravens rushing yards. Second prong, Burrow passer rating. And the third one is Bengals red zone percentage plus Bengals third down percentage.
What is the red zone and third down percentages on the year average?
99.3 if you add them together.
The combo is on average is 99.3. Okay.
It's like 33 and 66.
All right. This is a simple one. I think for me, it is. I'm going to run with Burrow passer rating. I'm going to pass on red zone plus third down. And I'm going to boot Ravens rushing yards. I don't think they run for a ton. I think they might fall behind. I think the Bengals will do a good job of stopping the run. And I think if Lamar plays, he's not going to be able to run as much. I think if Huntley plays, he's going to want to throw it more. And so for that fact, I'm going to go with a low rushing number and boot that one. So Burrow, Bengals red zone plus third down, then booting Ravens rushing yards.
Yeah, I just have questions with the Bengals linebackers. And you heard Jeff say it's not like they have great running backs, and we don't know if Lamar is going to play. So that is the rushing yards one is a big wild card here. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to run with Burrow passing yards, but I'm going to pass on the rushing yards, and I'm going to boot red zone percentage and third down percentage. I feel like this has more of a chance to be a low grinded out game. Just because so much is on the line and maybe there's going to be some more, a more conservative approach by both coaches. I don't think it's going to be this crazy shootout or like Jeff was kind of hinting at a blowout. So that's the way I'm going to go.
Okay. All right. Prediction time. I have mine written down here. Jay, I will let you go first.
I'm going to say Bengals 24, Ravens 23.
Okay.
I've been pretty bad at picking the Bengals lately, too. I've been wrong in five of the last seven games.
I've been feeling pretty good about the last 2 weeks have been on the right side of the news. And I've been happy about that. And I've got a pretty strong feeling about this week. I'm with Jeff. I think they run away with it. I think the Bengals are in such better shape health-wise. I think they're still the team that beat them up in Baltimore. I think there's a confidence that comes from that. I like the way they're playing right now. You know, it's obviously it's going to be a matter of not making mistakes. I don't think Baltimore has the weaponry to keep up. Again, they keep having these miracle comebacks over and over again, and you're always wondering about that. They just seem to find a way against all odds to be right there at the end. But I think the Bengals are capable of putting them away, and I think there's a chance this thing could end up looking like the Pittsburgh game a couple weeks ago. I'm not going to pick that. But I do think they win it going away. And I'm also doing this, Jay. I wrote about it earlier in the week, the leverage involved in this, how important it is, turning it over, taking off the must-win armband. I don't think they're making anything if they lose this one.
Makes sense.
They still can.
Yeah.
The path exists. I don't think they will. And I think they've got to have this one. So I'm calling it, taking my one singular shot. Must win for the Bengals. Armband off. 28-17, Bengals win.
Ooh. So that would give them their fourth double-digit win of the year against the Steelers and Ravens. It's uncharted territory.
It is. You know, we haven't really, you know, been in a place where you can feel like you can confidently predict this team to win a huge game. But I go back to, I think in some of their biggest games, they've played some of their best football, and Joe Burrow plays some of his best football. When this sets up to be a Burrow game, and you have the matchups that you do, and your healthy receivers like you do, healthy tight end that burned them last time like you do, I just think that that is going to be far too much for this battered Ravens defense to overcome, and I think they can post a number on them. I don't know. And then at that point, you're 9-6, and the Chiefs come to town, and that is a game that is all about how good is this team?
Mm-hmm.
What can they really do? Because if they hang with the Chiefs, you start thinking big, big. But that is counting chickens before they hatch. They got to have this one first. Must win. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be back with the walkout. Hopefully, we won't need some emergency postponement pod between now and then, but keep it locked to us on the site. If you're not a subscriber, we highly recommend it. There's a 50% off deal going on right now. Or on Twitter, at Paulie Jr., at Jay Morrison. You can always come check us out there and get all the latest news. And we'll be back with the walkout on Sunday, and we'll have the live room then on Monday at lunch, noon, to discuss everything that went down. So we've got all that there for you. And take some time away. Enjoy your family. Merry Christmas. I hope it's a great weekend for all of you, and then we will reconvene on the flip side of the holidays. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.